Hello, Bulldogs. Thank you for tuning in to Who's Behind the Bulldog, Arvada High School's community interview podcast series. I'm your host and one of the assistant principals at Arvada, Jeremy Jensen. Each week, I'll sit down with someone from our Arvada community, be it staff, students, families, or other community members, to hear their stories. We'll discuss their histories, successes, challenges, learnings, future hopes and dreams, and much more. I hope you find some connections in their stories and hopefully are inspired to take some time to get to know them a bit better as our school year progresses. We have an amazing community here at Arvada, and I hope we can continue to strengthen that despite the challenges that await us in these unknown times. Today's episode of Who's Behind the Bulldog features Olivia Andrew. Olivia co-teaches geographic studies with Rachel Powell, as well as introduction to business. She is also the head volleyball coach and coaches club volleyball on the side. In our conversation, Olivia shares what led her to the culturally and linguistically diverse education program at CU Denver, and how the hope of closing opportunity gaps and understanding the education system as part of this program helped shape her identity as a teacher. She opens up about how her exposure to culturally diverse literature opened her mind as a person of color who presents as white, and how that has changed her identity and worldviews. She talks about her strong connections to our students and how Arvada is really where she developed her own voice as an educator. She also shares about her learning experiences and parallels between coaching volleyball and classroom instruction, particularly in the arena of creating safe spaces and building relationships. Thank you so much for tuning into this week's episode of Who's Behind the Bulldog. Olivia, I'm so excited to talk to you today.
I'm also excited to be talked to.
Welcome to Who's Behind the Bulldog. Tell everyone a little bit about yourself and what brought you into education.
Well, I am a ninth grade teacher at Arvada High School, predominantly ninth grade geographic studies. So I'm the English side, but sometimes I dabble in my little knowledge of geography. And I also teach intro to business in the sports business pathway at Arvada. I am the head volleyball coach here as well. And I coach at Juggernaut Volleyball, which is down the street, a club volleyball. I got into education, actually. I refuted it for a very, very long time because both my parents were teachers. And I was always that kid. I was like, I'm not going to be like them. Turns out I was pretty good at it. Actually, when I first started coaching, instruction came easy to me and understanding kids came really easy to me because I still feel a lot like a child. So I just fell in love with it when I started student teaching and working with kids, and I just never looked back. So that's how I kind of got into it, I guess.
Was there a point in college where you're like, hey, I want to try teaching instead of a different path, or did you start off as a teacher pathway there?
I started off as a business major at Colorado Mesa University, took about 4 days of classes as a business major and said, I hate every second of this. I don't want to do this at all. Everybody in my class was like, the grind never sleeps, and money is the only thing that'll make you successful. I was like, no, I don't. And so I dropped very quickly and I just turned into an English major. After that, I was like, I like reading, I like social studies, all that kind of stuff. So let's just see what we can do with this. And by the end of my freshman year, I was in an education program. And then I transferred from Mesa to CU Denver my sophomore year because they had opened up a culturally and linguistically diverse education program at CU Denver. And that's more of what I wanted to do rather than just student teaching. And then I moved back to Denver and never really looked back after that.
Yeah. So say more about the culturally and linguistically diverse program that you took.
Well, it was really intense. It had a lot to do. All of our classes had everything to do about equity, how race plays a part, at least in education, how marginalized groups do not get the same treatment, do not get the same opportunities all the time in the education system, the traditional education system. And I took one class with a professor Roberta Montoya, who literally changed a lot of my perspective on everything that I had learned up until that point. And it was all about closing opportunity gaps, understanding the like types of systems that we function in every day that are all rooted in white privilege and sometimes white supremacy, and how we navigate that world as people of color. And that was super eye-opening to me, and he helped me find a lot of my identity as a teacher, and there's a lot of lessons I still use from my, what was it, junior year of college. I was 19 years old, I think, taking that class, and it just totally shaped how I figure out my own social stance and how I can impact kids. So it's a huge, huge program for me.
Do you have an example of something that you still use from that?
I do a lot of, we did an assignment that was called Epistemology Papers, and it was kind of like, what was a defining moment in your life that changed how you interacted with the world and how you saw things, maybe how you questioned what you thought before. And so sometimes we always do letter to the teacher. So it starts off with like, tell me about yourself, tell me your strengths, tell me your weaknesses, all those kinds of things. And I get to know the kids. And then later on in the year, what we would have done, because we would have done this last year had we not been shut down at the end of the year, I kind of like closing it out with like, what changed this year? What happened this year? And that was such a big moment where he kind of like dug in with us, like that moment actually did change all of these things, even though you subconsciously didn't think it did. And I asked my sixth graders my first year teaching to write a paper like that, and you would not believe some of the responses kids will give you if you just give them the opportunity to talk about that. So I do like doing that at the beginning, like figuring out who they are at the beginning of the year and the end of the year, and just exposing them to all sorts of literature. Like his class was the first time I had read a book by a Latina author in my entire life. So that was like just exposing you to things like that. And that's what I take a lot from when my teaching is giving kids opportunities for those kinds of things.
Reading that book, did that change things for you?
Yeah.
What ways?
I guess being a woman of color that presents as white a lot of the time, it was a hard, it's kind of hard growing up being like, yeah, I'm Mexican. And they're like, no, you're white. I'm like, well, I can be both of those things. And learning how to navigate that and kind of pushing down a side of my culture that I had never explored until I was in college. So I'm my entire life reading textbooks that are filled with everything but me, my entire life. And then finally being in a room where it's like, this is about me. This, here I am represented in here. Here I am that seeing this world that I never got to be a part of. And it was so freeing to kind of be like, well, I can be all of these things at the same time. I don't just have to fit into one box. And so not taking things at face value is like the biggest thing that I learned from that. Like, don't just, which is such a cliche, don't judge a book by its cover. But it's so true about our kids. How often do we just sit there and go, there's one incident, that's the whole story for this kid, and that's all I need to know about that, right? We have to open up the world of opportunity for them too, because maybe they only see themselves as one box also.
Tell me a little bit about Arvada specifically.
So the Culturally and Linguistically Diverse Education Program, it's not a mouthful at all, at CU Denver, they pair you with specific schools that are like hard to fill positions, or schools that specifically are dual language or have higher SPED numbers and all that kind of stuff. So they really place you in schools that don't fit the norm. And then they really challenge you to like figure out how to navigate. Because a lot of the teacher world, as you know, is like heteronormative white people that come in and they expect education to be one way. And that was part of our challenge, is to go into these schools and see how education can be so different just based on the type of kids that's in there. So I was paired with Arvada. My second semester of my junior year, or no, my first semester of my senior year. And so they kind of do a gradual program. So you start of like one day a week where you're just observing. Then your next semester you do 2 days a week where you take over co-teaching responsibilities. And then your final one is you go in 5 days a week and eventually you start teaching that class yourself. And so my very first semester was, I was teaching with actually Sergio Yanes. He was my first cooperating teacher, and he was teaching part English classes and part journalism classes. So I didn't get to do a lot that semester. It was more kind of sitting back and watching, and sometimes he would help let me plan with him. It was Josh White and him were on a team together. So that was super interesting to get my first like idea of what lesson planning looked like. Trust me, it does not look at all like what Josh and Sergio used to do. They're so lofty with their ideas, and they were such big dreamers, and that was such a cool experience for me to be able to go, kids can do it if you just let them. And that was kind of the big philosophy I learned from them. And then I started coaching volleyball here, actually. I was like the level 3 coach and the varsity assistant, because I still needed a job and they needed volleyball people. So that's how I got connected with Dan. And so I started coaching here. And because I had that tie, usually they don't let you stay at the same school 2 semesters in a row. So, but because I had that connection, was working here, they were like, that'll enhance her teaching a lot better and all that kind of stuff. So in the fall of the next year, I got switched to Rachel Powell being my cooperating teacher. And we taught 10th grade English. And that was such a fun learning experience because Rachel just threw me into the fire. Like, she was like, you're planning with us, we're using your units, let's go. And we just jumped in and went for it. And then unfortunately they didn't have a position for me when I did graduate, which was in December. Anyway, so I did long-term subbing here, and I would kind of like was the in-building sub for them when I did graduate. But then I went to Cherry Creek Public Schools, and as soon as they had an opening, they called me and were like, come back. And this has always been home for me. This is where I like my roots of teaching. Maybe not my roots, like my parents are my roots, but where I learned how to be my own type of educator. And so I think this place will always just have such a homey feeling in my heart of like, this is where I learned it all. This is where I got started. And I just watched my first group of kids graduate. The 10th graders that I taught originally just graduated this year. And those are lifelong relationships that I don't think I'll ever lose, which is such a cool feeling for the school.
What are some of the things that you're most proud of since you have been working here full time?
Probably the thing I'm most proud of, and I do like to brag about, I have a lot to learn about instruction and teaching and best practices in the classroom and stuff. But one thing that I feel like I'm really strong at is building relationships with kids. I understand them on a level that I don't think I would have if I were not, I'm so close in age to them, right? So that always helps when you're a younger teacher. You get their references, you know what they're talking about, you know what games they're playing, all that kind of stuff. And just building a culture of like, it's a safe place in my classroom always, it's a safe place in my gym always, giving kids an experience that, because I grew up, I hated school. Like, I liked it up until about middle school, and then middle school and high school, I was so disengaged and didn't have a ton of great relationships with teachers and stuff at that point. And maybe that's just being a teenager, but I also realized that I got into teaching to make an experience for kids that I didn't necessarily have. Like, always having a safe classroom to go to, always having an adult you can go talk to, always having someone to problem solve with when you have something wrong. And I just think that's probably what I'm proudest of, is being able to provide that most of the time for kids, which is nice.
Yeah, it's pretty obvious, you know.
That's good.
Students have a very safe space around you, and you have like really strong connections with people, I think, Who was it? Was it Lindsay Hewitt that had named that your name just kept coming up over and over and over again when she was asking students who they had like really tight connections to?
And that sometimes you don't feel that all the time, and then to get that kind of validation where it's like, okay, they do remember. Like the kids still call me, they still email me, and they're like, can you help me with this? Can you help me with this? And I don't know. I just hope to always be able to kind of foster that, if nothing else, giving kids that space. So.
How about in the classroom? Besides just the relationship side of things, like, do you have any strategies that you find like really work for making sure that students are engaged with the things that you're doing with your geographic studies classes, or in your business class, or any classes you're teaching?
Just authenticity. I'm not very good at faking lessons that I'm not interested in. Also, we co-plan on a team, and so not every idea is always put in, and not every single lesson is always put in. So sometimes you just have to like be really honest with them, be like, I don't understand this, but I'm gonna make sure that you guys get it. And for me, I learned this with sixth graders. They were so fun to teach because if you were excited about it, I mean, those kids are 10 and 11 years old, so it's a little bit easier to get those kids excited about school. If you were excited, I would always like stand on chairs and be like, here's what we're gonna learn today, and here's how, and I would jump around, make the class fun. We'd take brain breaks and stuff because they needed it. And I feel like I've lost a little bit of that coming back to high school, where it's like, no, we just need to do this, this, and this. And this year, I feel a lot more freedom, surprisingly, with all the COVID stuff, having a little bit smaller of classes, to be able to joke with the kids and be authentic and understand my content a lot better than I did last year. Just knowing your content and being authentic and why it's important, and why kids need to use it, and then knowing each of your kids to be able to like tie it back to something that they are interested too. So it's like, hey, if you're playing football, why would you need to know where certain people are located and how their demographics affect their football play? And kids are like, why would that even matter? And you're like, you don't realize how much content you learn in high school actually does apply out in the real world sometimes. But if you're engaging enough, kids will might not remember the exact lesson, but they'll remember the end goal, I think, eventually. So.
Yeah, like finding that authenticity is clutch because, you know, being an entertainer like on the stage, you know, does help and go, but it only does go so far, right? Like the students need to see the connections in order for them to be able to internalize and remember it for, you know, hopefully forever, you know.
So yeah.
How about projects? What are your some of your favorite things, or what's your favorite project that you all have done? So far here at Arvada, and why?
So far, I think last year we did the climate change. We partnered up with science, and then all of us in Geo Studies did a climate change unit last year. And for being the first year we did it, so much we have to work on to make it work for this year. But gosh, that was such a fun project, especially by the end, getting that authenticity. Last year we closed it out where kids, okay, so the beginning of the project was kids were assigned different countries. We kind of picked out these countries that had either good effects on climate change or horrible effects on climate change based on the regions they're at, their cultural understanding, their religion sometimes, their who they partnered with, who their allies were. So many different parts of geography, or so many different parts of social studies. They had to understand where they were located and why it mattered, and then understand the political aspects of it as well, which was so cool to see them actually get engaged and be like, my country actually sucks at this, and how are we going to change this? What kind of steps can we take? And kids just really dove into it, and you'd be. I always loved how we would end class and kids would be like, why are these people in charge? Why do they get to decide? Let me decide. I'm like, you're going to decide for all of Iran what what their oil prices should be? Okay. Like, but kids understand morally a lot better than I think adults do sometimes. And that was so cool to see at the end of it when we got them into Arvada City Hall. They presented all of their findings. They had websites. They were ready to go. Kids were ready to speak in front of the entire group of freshmen, which was huge. So if we honed in a couple of the skills on that one, this being our last year being our first year working with New Tech and the project planning toolkit and all that kind of stuff, this year I think it could be even better with how much information kids have been fed through social media, through the internet, through their phones all the time. I just think they have so much more access to stuff now and a better understanding of why they need to be involved in that kind of stuff. So that was my favorite project last year. And then our last day of that was like right when we shut down school for COVID. So it was kind of a good like
timing.
Done. End it. That's it. So.
Yeah, it was really fun to watch it because I went over there to see how it felt, and it just felt like the students really stepped up and they were like really invested once they got there in listening and contributing, and they were taking it really seriously. It was great.
Yeah, it was cool to be able to foster that from, because you'd look at your freshmen in August and you're like, they're never going to be able to do this project. And by March, they were already like so much more grown up and ready to tackle that. And it was cool to see that like between Kyle, Lauren, Rachel, and I, we all had like fostered enough of that in them to be brave enough to get up there. Because some kids wouldn't even talk to us for the first like 3 weeks of school. And then they're the ones that were like, we want to be the representative for our group and speak in front of the entire freshman class. Like, that was so cool to see how much they grew from that. So,
are you finding anything this year that is working with the remote side of things? Because projects like this, you know, lend themselves more to in-person things, right? But anything that you're starting to plan for or find actually is our opportunities for us to continue some of this work?
I think it just helps. The nature of my situation is that my co-teacher's remote, so it's easy for us to be able to be like, she's running the Zoom, I'm running in person, and they're all getting the same education basically. Like, and I know it's hard for other groups where they're like, we can't run the Zoom and be in here and do all of this extra stuff. And I think just having lessons that really putting the focus on where they can learn the toughest information, the best, like when they're remote, what can they do? How can we scaffold so that they retain information easily? And how do we almost make them have the cognitive struggle when they're in person, right? So it doesn't work necessarily for a lot of the fully remote kids. So just having access to them, access to Zoom, the technology that we have now is incredible. We do Screencastifies for everything. It's like, if you don't get it, watch this tutorial, watch how you would do this, that kind of stuff. And I think that's helped a lot.
How about equity? In your classroom, how do you promote the most equitable education possible?
We've all seen the picture of the baseball field where they are on the boxes and stuff. Instead of giving them all the same box or the same assignment, right? We modify, we change based on what we know about our kids. And I think that's even harder this year when there's not a lot we can know about them, right? They're so much more reserved, even when they're in person with the masks, they wouldn't be talking as much. We don't have the same culture. We went from having, 65 kids in a room every single day to maybe 10 or 15. So that's just such a different nature of it. I don't know. This is a tough question for me to answer because equity is never on the back burner for me, and closing opportunity apps is never on the back burner. It's, or for my team ever, it's the first thing we think about is how do we make this accessible for all students, and then we modify from there for the specific students that we know need our help. And that's the beautiful thing about co-teaching and co-planning with each other, is that we're all thinking of different things that some of us would have never thought of. And when the four people on your team come from a very similar education background, like three out of the four of us have our degree in culturally and linguistically diverse education, so we were never taught a different way. And then all four of us have such strong relationships with kids. And then our co-teachers come in and they go, I know specifically what student, like our students need, and I understand the content well enough to do so. And so it's almost like the blessing of having people that are just aware of that to begin with, and understanding your students. And almost sometimes you have to make assumptions about what their struggles might be, and maybe the kids aren't even aware of those things. You know, how we're constantly teachers talking about the students, sending emails back and forth. We see their Infinite Campus, we see their flags, all that kind of stuff. And having that always in the back of your head going, for the greater group, this lesson will work great, but already I know I'm going to have to adjust this for this student, or this student will have to do this. And just always having that in your head. And it's so exhausting. And good teachers are always exhausted because of that, because you're like, I have to create so many of these different things. But then when you watch that kid get it or contribute something, maybe they've never contributed and they contribute because you modified that lesson for them, that's huge. Like, that's all we're looking for, is the experience, right? Like in our class, it's just about the experience for them and liking high school and knowing that they can do it. It's such an important year. Because we even, I don't know what, it was in our grade level meeting last week. We had people from the district come in and tell us that their freshman year is their make it or break it year. And if it's like some ridiculous, like 80% of them go on to graduate if they pass on their freshman year. I'm like, what a daunting task to have a 14-year-old have to have their entire high school experience defined by 1 year, right? So I think, and there's some systemic problems with that and why that is the way it is, but in our class, like, that really forced us to think, like, how do we make it accessible for kids but challenge them too? Because it's not always just about the grade or whether they're doing it or not doing it. At the end of the year, if a kid can tell me every unit and what they learned from it, maybe sometimes it doesn't matter as much how many assignments they actually turned in. Maybe we just focus on their writing skills instead of the busy work maybe we're giving them. And that's such a cool thing to have a team that's willing to have those conversations and be like, they're doing too much. What are they learning?
Well, you made a lot of really good points. I think one of them in the beginning, you were saying, like, it's not something that's on the back burner. And that has to be true, right? Because, like, equity is not something that lives in a silo. It's not like, mm-hmm. there's this, and this, and then there's equity. Like, equity literally lives everywhere. Mm-hmm. And I think once you approach everything from that lens and that standpoint, then you can make those decisions ahead of time instead of, like, pausing and being like, okay, now how do I change this, or how would I modify it? Those things have already been thought through.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then, like, representation too. We've all kind of switched up our mindset about how to represent kids, and already that gets them more engaged. If they see themselves on paper, they see themselves in a book, they see themselves in this character. And when equity is not just a back burner in your life, so for people of color, for women, for people that have a non-heteronormative sexual orientation, those kinds of things for our kids, that's always in our lives, right? That's always something that we're thinking about, we're understanding, and to have the privilege to not have to think about it is just a disservice to our students. And so putting yourself in that lens, that it's not a side note, it's not a checklist for a PD, it's not a Facebook post showing solidarity. It is literally the lived experience of kids that we need to always have that at the forefront. And when you start doing that, it can be hard sometimes at first if you're not living that experience all the time, but it's just like, I don't know, playing volleyball. The more you do it, the better you're going to get at it. The more you practice, the better you're going to get at it, so that it becomes second nature. And our team we're lucky enough to have everybody on here where it's not second nature anymore. Like, it just comes off right away instead of waiting until we've messed up and we have to backtrack. So,
what are some of the things that you're most excited for this upcoming school year?
I'm excited for my volleyball season, to be honest. Even with COVID restrictions and everything, having a year under my belt, understanding what we need to do and having the time to maybe train it a little bit better. The nature of our school, like getting kids joining the volleyball team 3 weeks into the school year, is something I never would have thought of until I did it. And now having time in March, like our season isn't until March, I have all of this time from like November to March to be able to get my team ready. That's huge. And like recruit kids, get them to come play. And then the same thing with teaching. I feel like I know the units well enough, I know my content well enough that I can start working on like specific practices that will make me better in the classroom instead of just relying on like the relationship piece. Like, yes, that's always there and that'll always be the foundation of it, but really getting into like, how do I force my kids to struggle cognitively with some of these things and make them think and make them almost have the growing pains of it? Because I wasn't that kind of learner. I wasn't the one that wanted to work hard to learn something. If I didn't get it, I get frustrated. Same, I do that with sports too. If I don't get it, I get frustrated right away and I'd want to give up, or I want to be the best at it. But actually being able to not have the frustration of like, just get it done, now I can really hone in on how I'm impacting kids with practices that I might have never tried and finding something new. Mm-hmm. And I feel like we have the space to do it, honestly, in COVID times. Like, I don't know. I really thought this year was going to be a lot harder, and seeing the kids is so nice, and having the smaller classes, having a flexible schedule is actually pretty helpful, I think.
So what do you want to hone in on a little bit more, like instructionally speaking? Is there something that you're like, this is an opportunity to really get strong in a certain component of your teaching?
This might bite me later for being the English teacher, but like actually teaching reading and writing. I think we kind of just get thrown into it where it's like, you read the book and they write something, you read the book and they write something. And that, we didn't even read a book last year, and this year we're trying to work it into our curriculum. And like understanding the purposes of what kids need to know and why they need to know it for writing purposes, and like different ways to teach it, because I've only seen a couple ways that it's done. And then maybe trying something different, watching different teachers teach it, listening to podcasts of how this is important, or reading books that say why this skill is more important than this skill, those kinds of things to teach them how to connect with a book or any sort of text and be able to write about it in creative ways. Because I feel like we just focus on the standardized testing kind of thing. Like, you're going to need to know this paragraph format and how to cite evidence, and those things are super important for sure. But really getting down to the creative piece of like loving reading and writing, because so many kids, my feelings are never hurt when kids are like, English is my least favorite subject. Like, I get it. When it's not taught well, and sometimes I don't know if I'm teaching it well either, when it's not done right and it's not done with authenticity and a purpose at the same time, I think it is really tough. And I had a really good mentor at my last school that taught me a lot of those things about how to get kids ready for the standardized test but not teach to it. And I followed her lead a lot, but now in a different district with different age group, I want to learn how to do that on my own and backwards design it a lot better. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of my goal for the end of this year.
It sounds like you almost use that as a challenge in a way.
Yeah.
And I was kind of similar when I taught math too. I was like, oh yeah, well, I will give you a different math experience then. Mm-hmm. So that is not your least favorite subject,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah. It's kind of the end. I mean, and even if they still hate it, but they know how to, like, well, I'll always remember how to find evidence and cite it anytime I'm in an argument with someone. Anytime I'm doing this, they think of Miss Andrews' class and like, this is how I find relevant evidence, and this is how I research that. And that's such a cool, like, I have teachers that I still remember stuff like that from, where I'm like, oh, this is how they taught it. And like, you go back and you're like, that was what, 9-10 years ago? How do I still remember that? And I want that for kids to be able to like hone that in and be able to use that later on in life.
Because that content can also be inspirational too.
Yeah.
Like it's not just about relationships or about conceptual things. It's like sometimes like content heavy.
Yeah.
Like develop future writers. Who knows what will happen with the kids.
Oh, that'd be cool.
What has been your best failure?
I feel like I keep jumping back and forth between volleyball and here, but and teaching. but volleyball was like the biggest eye opener for me. Actually, last year, our very first. Oh my God, the amount of times that Q has told me that I am the right person for the job and I will change this program for the better, and I am the end all be all of what this program should be, gave me way more confidence than I probably should have had for my first game last year. We lost to West High School 25-1 in all three sets. Ooh. Like, the only points we scored was the mistakes that they made. And I was like, I mean, I've coached at Juggernaut at the club I coach at, which is a completely different environment. It's kids who have been playing since they were like 6 years old, and they travel nationally, and I've coached a team that has won a national tournament before, and like those kinds of things. So I came in and I went, this is who I am, and I will push this on the kids and they will be what I want them to be. So I held the high expectation for sure. I completely ignored the fact that none of these kids have a background in volleyball or had even touched a volleyball before I became the coach or anything like that. So it was all this new stuff. And when we lost that game, I went, that has nothing to do with the kids. That was me. That was my fault for trying to create a national level team with kids who had barely even played the game at all, didn't have the IQ for the game. And that wasn't their fault at all. And I kind of switched that into my teaching where I was like, where do I set the bar? It's still always high. The kids will always meet you. If you set it and you tell them to come with, but you can't just stand up at the top of the ladder where the bar is and go, I'm up here. Come get me. You have to come down the ladder and help them climb up it as well. So the next game, it was like a week later, we played Manual High School, and I had completely switched what our practice looked like. I had completely switched rotations. I said, you're going to have to learn these, and that's on you guys, but the rest I will help you with, right? Like those kinds of things. And we put up 20 points in each set. Again, we still lost, but the kids were excited. Their coach was pissed because she thought it was going to be an easy win. Her kids were tired. They were like, those kids just don't give up. And we had that reputation the entire rest of the season as, yeah, we were still losing. And that was okay, though, because the kids were having fun. They were learning something new about their team, learning something new about themselves every single time. And every time we left a school, coaches were like, dang, they are so much better than previous years. Dang, they don't give up. Those kids are so nice. They are so kind. They are so respectful. And they have fun out there. That is so cool. I cannot wait to see what they do in the next couple years. And that was such an eye-opener for me that, like, kids at this school especially, they don't need the pity and they don't need the drill sergeant screaming at them. They need the in-between of the high expectation and the support to get there. And so I think that has rolled over into this year where I'm like, it's okay if you don't finish the assignment. Did you learn something? What can you take back to your group later on? And so that was a big thing for me, instead of just being like, I can change the kids at Arvada. No, I can use the kids at Arvada and have everything that they bring to the table, and that's still a complete strength for them. So that was really cool. That's why I'm excited for this year, because now I know. Now we're not going to lose that badly ever again. So
that's awesome.
Thank you.
last question. What is your big advice for others?
My big advice, and this is something I'm working on too, is it's so difficult to understand a different side of a story when you are fed one piece of it and one group of it that makes it look like the other side is bad. And so my advice, or I guess plea to educators everywhere, is like trying to take the lens that like equity is not a bad thing. Equity is not a dirty word. It is not a bad word. It is not a extra task that's really difficult to manage. I think it's just, it seems like a daunting task to change your perspective when presented with new information. And that's all any of us ever do all the time. Like, you get a new perspective of it and you change your opinion, and it just seems like we're all very stubborn, and not even just in this school, in the world currently, the kind of scary political climate, to change an opinion when you learn something new. And so I just think educating yourself from both sides, and this is what I've been doing too, and I've stopped unfriending people that have different opinions than me. I've stopped getting them rid of them in my life. I've started asking them questions and asking them, like, no, I'm not trying to argue, I want to know. And then we start dialogues and stuff. So that's, I'd say the advice is just read more, read different, and read to understand, listen to understand. And I'm saying that as advice that is hard for me to take as well. So it's not like on a soapbox or anything, but yeah.
Olivia, thank you so much for your time here today. Our kids are really lucky to have you as one of their educators who provides them with a space that they are able to be themselves and be comfortable and build a relationship and to have a high bar and to really aspire to do some really great, amazing things. So thank you for all you do on an ongoing basis. Thank you for the passion that you bring to your job and to our school and to our kids, because they deserve you.
Thank you. It means a lot. I'm excited to be here.
Thank you all for tuning in to today's podcast. I want to encourage you to take a minute to reach out to today's guest and make a personal connection. Until next time, this has been Jeremy Jensen with Who's Behind the Bulldog?